Hi, it's James Martell, and welcome to another edition of Coffee Talk. Today, my special guest is Ken McCarthy, and in this session, we're going to be talking about copywriting. I know many listeners are already thinking about or are already in the process of creating newsletters, crafting copy for their autoresponders, developing sales copy, writing headlines, and working on ways to increase their traffic, improve their conversion rates, and to just better succeed online. Ken is an expert in all of these areas. Many have heard me talk about Ken as the founder of the System Seminar, an internet marketing conference that was highly recommended to me by Ed K. Smith, a Google AdWords and domain name expert and a very good friend of mine who lives in Perth, Australia. Ed told me about the System Seminar a couple years ago, and he basically told me to go. Mainly because it was just such a good conference, and he's right. It's a conference quite different than the rest that I've attended over the many years. Its main difference is that there is no hype, and it's filled with speakers who are actually in the various aspects of internet marketing who are sharing with us what they're really doing to make money and grow their businesses online. It's real training courses with no sales pitches, and no gurus are allowed. And I'll actually ask Ken about that in a bit. It's actually my most favorite conference. Ken is known for the System Seminar, but he's probably best known for his pioneering work in the movement to commercialize the internet in the first part of the 1990s, including early experiments with legitimate email advertising, contributions to the development of the banner ad, practical applications of pay-per-click advertising, and internet video. In 1994, way back, almost 15 years ago, he organized and sponsored the first ever conference held on the potential commercial applications of the World Wide Web. Mark Andreessen, co-founder of Netscape and developer of the first commercially successful web browser, was the keynote speaker. Other internet pioneers who acknowledged the impact McCarthy's ideas had on their own work include Ed Niehaus, Rick Voice, and Steve O'Keefe. In a talk at PacBell in 1994, McCarthy described in detail the new content marketing and distribution model the internet was making possible, a model now sometimes referred to as the long tail. Ken, thank you so much for joining me for Coffee Talk.
Oh, my pleasure, James.
You know, I got to say, I'm really happy that you've agreed to have a chat because I'm a real big fan of your newsletter, and I really enjoy your writing style. And I know you and I had a chance to talk a little bit about that down at the System Seminar in May, and you shared a lot of ideas with me about how you can write copy that's educational, interesting to read, and far more appealing to the reader than some of the hardball selling tactics we see some using today. And I've had a chance to talk with some of the listeners earlier, and I really want to explore this idea more with you. However, before we do that, I'd like to ask you, what gave you, way back in 1994, and I don't know what that would be in internet years or in earth years, but that's about 200 years ago in normal time, I would think, as far as the internet's concerned. But what gave you way back in 1994 the foresight to organize the first conference ever held on the potential commercial applications of the web?
Well, a lot of it had to do with sort of right place and right time with the right stuff. I had been doing a lot of direct mail marketing at the time, so I was very familiar with the direct marketing model. I was living in San Francisco. I had gotten involved in what was then called the multimedia industry, and this was pre-consumer CD-ROMs. It was sort of a transitional period in digital media where, you know, we were going from Windows didn't even exist, if you can imagine that. The only graphical user interface computer was the Apple. Everything else was MS-DOS, I guess. And then there was this band of sort of wild-eyed tinkerers and futurists who were developing what they called digital media, you know, putting video on big discs, making content interactive. I mean, all this sounds like old hat today, but it didn't exist in the early 90s. And I had also been involved in video production, and I was just fascinated by this idea of interactive media. So I got involved in that. San Francisco was kind of the hotbed for that, being so near to Silicon Valley. And then I just, encountered the Internet in 93, and I was just blown away because, it was just clear to me that if the world adopted, I was just hoping maybe 10% of my marketplace would adopt the Internet, because I could calculate that this was going to save me a tremendous amount of mailing costs, because I was writing, five-figure postage checks regularly. And so the idea of being able to push a button and reach thousands of people at essentially no cost was nirvana for me. So what I basically did was because I had connections in what was then called multimedia and within the Internet community, the then fledgling Internet community, and mainstream marketers, direct mail people, traditional advertising media people. I happen to just know people in all those camps. I got them together and said, let's sit down and really look at this web thing and see what we might be able to do with it. So that's how it came to pass. I don't think I could have done it if I was living in Iowa, I know I couldn't have done it if I hadn't had my direct marketing experience and my video experience. I think I would have just not gotten it.
I know I had a chance to watch the video, and it was nice to see that conference was actually captured, because being the first, obviously that's a pretty historic moment. And I got a chuckle out of it when you had mentioned that Mark Andreessen, co-founder of Netscape, that there were over 20 companies working on commercial applications for the web. Imagine that, there were 20 of them.
Count them, right? And we were, we were just, I wouldn't say we were whistling in the dark, but, he and I and a bunch of other people had really gone out on a limb in 1994. I mean, we basically bet it all on the Internet becoming something, and we didn't know. We didn't know whether it would be adopted or not. I think he was trying to give himself courage by pointing out that there were 20 companies doing things on the Internet commercially.
that's quite something, because I don't know what there would be today, but it would be a safe bet to say probably into the many millions.
In terms of businesses that have some part of themselves on the Internet, either distributing information or selling products, generating leads, I'd say it's tens of millions, if not maybe a couple of hundred million. It's grown.
I know you're a graduate of Princeton University, and you mentioned that you've got experience in the direct marketing industry. Would you please take a few minutes and just give us a little bit of your background, tell us about yourself, and a little bit of your history, and bring us up to date?
Okay. I've always been interested in media. I've produced, in the old days, I produced records, pre-CD. I produced concerts. I produced videos. I wrote a lot. I still write a lot. I've been interested in the history of media, how media evolves. I've been very interested in psychology. These are just things I'm just naturally interested in. I just find them fascinating. And for years and years, I read widely about these subjects, frankly not knowing how they'd ever have commercial use. I spent a lot of years pre-internet and pre-direct marketing gathering knowledge and not knowing what earthly use I put it to, but I do have a pretty good storehouse of knowledge about human psychology and perception and media and sociology and social trends and all that kind of thing. And my early quest in my 20s was to figure out how to put bread on the table, and one of the things I did was I started a small company called Optimal Learning, which taught college students and others how to read faster, study better, improve their memories. And the way I built that course that company was on public courses. There was no internet, of course, back then. And I just kind of on my own discovered, not knowing that there were books about it, I discovered the classic direct marketing principles, lead generation, the importance of headlines, the importance of a call to action, the importance of follow-up and maintaining a good database, the importance of, you know, stressing benefits over features, the importance of customer service, you know, very, very important part of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And so that got me real practical hands-on experience with what's called direct marketing. Worked on Wall Street for a couple years after that. Worked in the film industry in New York City for a little bit. Then ended up out in San Francisco. Got interested in multimedia, but also, you know, I wasn't making any money for multimedia because it was so brand new. So I was looking for something practical to do, and I noticed, and we really come full circle on this. I'd noticed that interest rates were coming down, and this was starting to stimulate mortgage lending. Especially refinancing, you know, because if you have a mortgage at 10% and interest rates go down to 9 or 8 or 7, well, it makes sense to refinance.
Yes.
So that happened to coincide with the rise of the independent mortgage broker, which didn't exist before then, really. And I was helping mortgage brokers use direct marketing. I was helping them search public databases, you know, to find people that you could tell had a high mortgage because of the year that they originated the mortgage. I showed them how to use direct mail. I showed them how to use inbound telemarketing. I had a conference that I put on every year, sort of like the model I have now. I had workshops that I gave, all pre-internet, by the way. There was just no internet. And I was using a phenomenal amount of direct mail because it was the only way to reach people. And then, of course, the internet came along, and I it was kind of a hard decision because I was basically working two lives. I'd run my educational company for mortgage brokers, you know, it was the 8-10 hour day, have dinner, and then I'd put on my internet hat and work, you know, till midnight, 2-3 in the morning on trying to sort out the internet world. I didn't want to let go of the mortgage thing because that was real. And the internet thing just seemed uncertain. I think around 96, 97, I finally said, hey, you know, this is really for real, and got involved in it. So that's a thumbnail of my career.
Now, I know down at the system seminar in 2000 that I attended, and I actually had a chance to, as you know, attend again in 2008, and I brought my wife along with me, and we did a little tour of Chicago, which is a spectacular city. It was never it was never on my list of places to visit. I just never thought of it as a tourism type city, but we got there, and what a spectacular place.
Yeah, Chicago's a real sleeper. It's a great place to visit. It's beautiful. It's fascinating. Everything you'd ever want from a big city, they've got. It's got a lot of history, great art, great music, incredible food. I'm a New Yorker originally, and my brother met and married a woman from the Midwest, and she persuaded him to move to Chicago, and we all thought it was the end of the world. We couldn't imagine why anyone would want to go from New York to Chicago. But now when I go out there, and I try to go out there as much as I can, I just love it. I think it's one of the great American cities.
Yeah, it's quite something. Arlene and I had a chance to we all usually take a couple extra days anytime we go to a conference, and we did this that time as well and ended up on one of the architectural boat tours around the city and just had a ball.
Yeah.
Now, I know at the System seminar, in fact, in 2007 and again in 2008, and right on the front page of the booklet that you gave to us attendees, there is a saying that you have there that is traffic plus conversion equals profits. Mm-hmm. Would you explain to listeners what you mean by that?
Yeah, that evolved out of the System seminar, and it came about in this way. Because I've been a direct marketer for so long before the internet, I sort of internally absorbed basic principles of direct marketing. And as I started trying to teach people internet marketing, I kept seeing people just getting lost and having problems and not able to find traction and just having a difficult time. And I really puzzled over this for a long time, trying to figure out how I could help people. Why weren't they getting it? And I don't know, it just popped into my head, you know, this simple formula, which is deceptively simple because it's actually quite powerful. In fact, we have a student named Lloyd Irvin, fascinating guy. He was a world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu, American champion in judo, American champion Russian sambo. He's trained ultimate fighters. He's trained guys that have gone to the Olympics and to Pan American Games. A real great athlete. But 5 years ago, he came to us not knowing anything about internet marketing, and today he's pushing on $10 million a year in sales. And he attributes his success largely to that formula. And let me explain the formula and why it's so useful. When you're when you're thinking about starting an internet business or you're trying to grow an internet business, there are really only two things that matter. And those two things are getting traffic, relevant traffic, and the other thing is turning that traffic to value, converting it, monetizing it. And because of the way we are, me included, we all tend to go off on tangents. We all make things more complicated than they need to. We all get involved in side issues. You know what I mean? We're just very good at losing the track. You know.
Yes.
And so what I started teaching, and it turned out to be very helpful to people, is I said, look, if you're not working on traffic for your business and you're not working on conversion for your business, what the heck are you doing? Because there's nothing else. Now, yeah, you have to sharpen your pencils. You have to empty the waste paper basket.
That's right.
You have to, file your taxes. Okay, but none of those things have to do with growing and expanding a business. The only things that matter are traffic and conversion. So if you're ever wanting, trying to figure out what to do next, it's very simple. You're either out there searching for more traffic, or you are figuring out new ways to convert and monetize the traffic you're getting. And this little mantra or formula turns out to be just, endlessly useful to people, me included.
Yes. No, it's so easy. It's so easy to get off track and be working on things that are not going to really have any effect on your bottom line.
Well, also, too, let's say somebody wants to start a business, and they're coming at this new, where they want to start a new business. Step one is, is there traffic? You have the greatest idea in the world, the greatest product, the greatest ad copy, the greatest vision, the greatest energy, the greatest, enthusiasm. But if you can't put your hands on and articulate exactly where that traffic is going to come from, there is no business. And it's good to know that, because there's a lot of good ideas that just can't be businesses because there's no reliable, repeatable source of traffic. And conversely, you kind of want, if you're going to start something new, you kind of want to see an industry or a niche or a marketplace where there's a lot of activity, where there's a lot of sales going on, where there's a lot of conversions going on. People buying small products and then buying bigger products and making larger commitments, and you want to see this already happening in a market that you're thinking about going into. And why? Because you don't want to be the guy that invents the wheel. You want to enter a niche or a marketplace where people are already in the habit of spending money. Like, for instance, the one that you're working in, James, automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
We know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that there are thousands and thousands of people in that niche gladly spending money, going to car shows, buying parts, visiting websites. That's the kind of market you want to enter, where there's already a lot of established conversion going on. So this is not only good for keeping a business, an existing business, on track, it's a very good way for picking and rejecting what appear to be opportunities.
Yes. I know I was chatting with Phil Watkins, who I work with closely here, and we're always having this conversation about online versus offline and what's the difference. And you, coming from the direct marketing business of the, I guess you'd say, the 80s, where you, as you said, you had to, write a check for five figures because you needed to put it in the mail in order to get your message in front of the viewers, where today we, and of course you needed to be right on the money with your conversion rate, because I would imagine you could lose a lot of money very quickly.
Oh, just imagine. I mean, yeah,
Where today's a little different, and people can get, a little bit sloppy about the conversion rate, because it can be very inexpensive just to send out, 10,000 emails versus the old days, I guess, where you'd send out 10,000 direct mail pieces.
By the way, that would cost you, in those days, postage, printing, handling on the average about a dollar per piece. So if you were mailing to 10,000 people, you were writing a $10,000 check. You know, that's very different.
I think nothing is sending an email to 10,000 people, and it doesn't really cost me much of anything.
Yeah. I have a list, a side business that I have, where it's about, I think, around 32,000 now. I mail them daily. I think that's pretty close to a million. Is that a million? A million pieces of mail a month?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm using old AWeber, and, you know, I don't know what I'm paying, but I don't even notice what I'm paying because it's little.
So, and then back in the 80s, that would cost you $1 million a month.
$1 million a month. And, you know, the neat thing about the Internet, and I don't hear many people talk about this, but it's a very important concept, is because of the economy of the Internet, all kinds of businesses are possible that just would not have worked out financially. For instance, this thing where I'm mailing a million emails a month to 30,000 people, you know, it's a collection of videos. It's sort of a hobby area. I'm monetizing it with AdSense. I mean, none of this would have been possible. I'm giving, you know, obviously, well, not obviously, but the subscription is free. I don't really care whether, in this particular case, I don't really care whether they pay or not. I just want to come to the page and click the AdSense ads. But it's fascinating to me that this enterprise, which is on track this year to net over 100,000 a year, and it takes me about 15 minutes a day, would not have worked in the old days. You know, you couldn't have copied VHSs and sent them free to people on the hope that they might click on it.
Day.
Yeah, and yet, and not only is it a business that's making money today, it grows at about 10% a month. And it's just wonderful, you know. And so the internet not only makes sort of classic businesses possible, but all kinds of new wrinkles on business that just wouldn't have been possible before.
Let's talk about copywriting. Let's kind of maybe shift gears a little bit and talk about and start right at the beginning, if we could, because I know there's a lot of listeners that have been around for a while and they're quite proficient at putting their content together, and there's a number of them that are very efficient, do extremely well. But there's also those people who are brand new and maybe haven't written since they left college or even high school many years ago. And I know when I got started back writing again back in, I guess, 99, I hadn't really sat down and put words to a page for probably 15 years. So it took me a long time to kind of get ramped up to being able to actually even write again. Mm-hmm. But let's start off with the terminology. What is copywriting?
Oh, wow, that's an interesting question. What is copywriting? Well, copywriting, I guess, is the art of using words to persuade, to educate, and persuade people to take specific actions. You know, so as a copywriter, you kind of work backwards. You think about, okay, when the person has finished reading what I've said, what is it that I want them to believe and to do? And then you write what it is you have to say. That's the neat thing about direct marketing and direct response advertising, and people who realize that the Internet is direct marketing, is that's the direct marketing model. So everything that we learned in school about, you know, writing essays and, you know, this and that, you can pretty much throw out the window. We are results-driven writers, and we start with the result we want in mind. So that's probably the most fundamental difference between copywriting and other kinds of writing.
The result could be anything from filling in an email form to making a purchase. Maybe you could talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, one of the skills, there's a lot of skills related to being a good copywriter that have nothing to do with writing. And one of them is to, I guess, for lack of a better word, it's awareness. And it's awareness of all the points in your communication with your customers and your prospects where there is a decision and action point. Let me lay this out really clearly. When you send an email to to somebody, okay, believe it or not, they've got other things to do that day. There's probably other emails in their email box that morning or afternoon.
Yes.
The only thing they see about your email is who it's from and the subject line, what it's about. So that is a decision and action point right there. That is a do or die moment. The reader is making a decision to open or delete. And that's a massive decision, because if they delete, you have a 100% chance of no action ever happening. So what you, for instance, what you put in your, whether you write well or not, it's very important to be able to perceive or recognize those critical action and decision points. So one of them, obviously, is the open or not open, read or not read decision that your reader's going to make. And then you figure out, okay, what is my reader basing this decision on? Well, I really only have a line. Actually, I have two things. I have the from line and the subject line.
Yes.
And, you know, that's, you realize you've got to put a lot of thought into that particular email appealing. You know, another decision that someone makes in writing, and this was figured out by David Ogilvie, is the first 50 words of your email. It is extremely important when you're writing email or a sales letter or anything that the very first words that come out of your mouth, so to speak, are right on the money. This is very important to realize. You don't have time to warm up. You don't have time to get to it. It's a little bit. I used to run the 100-yard dash when I was in high school, and now we have the Olympics, of course. In that race, you better be out when the gun fires. You better be way down out of blocks and down the course, or the race is already over. And it's the same thing with direct mail writing. You really got to make sure that you're leading with something very powerful. Why? Because, again, your reader is making a decision to actually get into what you're saying, or to skim it quickly and toss it aside. So that's another really important action point. But there are so many decision and action points. You know, getting people to open the email, getting people to read the email, getting people to click on the link. Okay. Once they click on the link and come to the page, again, the whole process repeats itself. You need to come out of the gates really fast and show them something immediately compelling so that they're inspired to read the first sentence and the second sentence and so on.
You know,
and there's go ahead.
It's, you know, I'm actually on your email list, I think I mentioned that to you earlier. And I've actually noticed a number of things about the way you write your emails. And they're very eloquent and they're very interesting. And I've noticed that you have a very, I would say, unique approach. And I noticed that your email lines, your subject lines do stand out, and that sometimes you refer to a YouTube video that's not your own, which is an interesting idea all on its own, and that your emails always tell a story. And I went through my inbox earlier today to see all the emails that I've received from you, and I pulled out a number of them. But let me just kind of talk about one of them, if we could, because it's such a brilliant example of, I think, of what you're talking about as far as capturing somebody's attention. So your subject lines are always completely different than anybody else's in my inbox, and goodness knows I get too many emails. Yeah. But this subject line says, "What I learned from Indiana Jones." It goes on to say, "Hi, James," or it actually just says James. "J. Abraham has a favorite scene from the Indiana Jones series. It happens to be my favorite, too. It dramatizes one of the most important lessons in marketing and business building. It's something almost nobody teaches, but frankly, you can't succeed without. The answer and actual clip is here," and you include a link to the page where the video is. Now, first off, when you say there's two decisions, when I see an email from Ken McCarthy, I appreciate that. When I see that subject line, you always capture my curiosity, and I appreciate that. But I think this is a great example of what you're talking about. Maybe you could explain some of the thinking behind the way you put these together.
Absolutely. And I'm going to refer to two pretty great business minds. One is the late Gary Halbert, And Gary said something once. I only heard him say it once, but it really stuck with me, and I repeat it to as many people as I can. Gary said, a sale is a very fragile thing. And I think one of the reasons, and people that don't know, Gary was one of the greatest copywriters of all times. And I think the reason, one of the reasons Gary was an incredible copywriter is he never took anything in the sales process for granted. You know, he never just threw up a headline or threw up an opening line or, you know, everything was very carefully thought out because he realized how fragile the whole process is of grabbing somebody's attention, holding it, and moving them forward down the sales chute. Also, Andy Grove, you know, who was CEO of Intel, I think he wrote a book called Only the Paranoid Survive, which is another way to look at this, which is that it helps to have a little bit of, you know, healthy paranoia when you're writing ad copy. And by that, I mean realize that you are in a battle, and a very, very challenging battle for the attention of your reader. Here's my vision when I'm writing ad copy. I imagine that my prospect is running down the street being chased by a pack of wild dogs, and he's wearing a necklace of raw pork chops. Okay? And I'm standing there, and he's about to run past me, and I have to say something that's so compelling and so on the money and so on target that he's actually going to stop and say, "Tell me more." Okay? And this frame of mind that I'm in is very important for coming up with good stuff, because most people think, well, I got to write something. I need some kind of subject. Well, I'll throw this in there. I'll just start talking. No. You just have to realize the fragility of the whole process. So I'm starting with that point of view. So this particular email that you're using as an example, let me show you some of my thinking. Number one, I always like, when possible, to connect what I'm talking about to something that is already big and in the public's attention. When I wrote that email, the Indiana Jones movie had just launched. It was in all the newspapers, all the television stations. It was all over the Internet. People were thinking about it. So why not, you know, if the wind is blowing, why not put up your sail and let the wind take you along? Very important principle, by the way, in advertising and copywriting. You know, look for wind that is already blowing. Don't try to blow the sail yourself and make the boat go. That is exhausting. Look for, you know, a nice, good, natural wind. So the Indiana Jones phenomenon, by the way, very brief. You know, already, you know, in our conversation now, some people might be going, Indiana who? But when I wrote that, it was red hot. So that's number one. Number two, I thought, well, how am I going to use this Indiana Jones phenomenon? And I happened to remember, because it made an impression on me at the time, that I once heard J. Abraham talking about this particular scene. And so I had an anecdote, the story, to use. And why did I use J. Abraham? Because so many people recognize his name as a master marketer. That's certainly going to, you know, catch people's attention. Then I wanted to, you know, turn it into a little bit of a tease, quite frankly. I didn't want to, in this case, lay the whole thing out in the email. I wanted them to click. I wanted them to leave their email and come, in this case, to a blog page. Okay, that was my goal. So I caught their attention with the Indiana Jones. I sort of teased them, or, you know, aroused their curiosity. I made it really easy for them to pursue the answer. You know, if somebody is an entrepreneur and they're trying to build their business, and they've just been told that J. Abraham and Ken McCarthy like the same scene from this movie that's currently very hot, because it illustrates the most important thing about business, that's pretty tempting. I'm a fisherman. I'm baiting the hook. I'm trying to figure out, well, what kind of fish am I fishing for? What kind of bait do they like? And so that's what I'm thinking. So they clicked on the page to come to my blog. Now, I'm using a clip from YouTube. It belongs to somebody else, but, you know, there's an embed code available, so there's an implicit offer for anybody to take it and use it, so I'm using it. And I decided to play the game a little further. I didn't tell people what the clip was. This was a montage of clips, and they had to guess which is the clip that that Jay and I thought so highly of. So here's what I'm trying to do here, and this is sort of the second leg of the persuasion process is it's not enough just to grab people's attention. You know, you can run in, you know, walk into a movie theater and yell fire, okay? You grab somebody's attention. But how productive is that? It's not productive at all. And then sometimes you see these silly ads or these arm twisting ads that make these, you know, ridiculously bold statements, and then you finally get to the letter and there's no there. So if you want to persuade people and get people to take action, you can't just grab their attention and then have nothing to offer. You have to grab attention first, hold attention, and then engage them, get them interested, get them involved. The word involvement is very, very important. Here's the key. Nobody will ever buy anything from you if they are not involved in your sales story, your sales pitch, your sales letter. So the currency, the foundation of all this is attention. But once you've got the attention, then you need to find ways to get them into the story. I love video because video is easy. Let's face it. People love watching flickering screens. It's very compelling. I set up this little exercise where I said, hey, try to watch these scenes and figure out if you can pick the one that Jay and I both think is great. Now the person's involved. They're watching the movie. They're doing something. You know, they're I'm very often in my letters, if you watch, I'm asking people to mentally do things, to imagine things, to calculate things, to think things through. Why? I want them involved. I don't want them at an arm's length distance. I want them in the process. So as this went on, the folks watch the little video clip. They see the different scenes. They try to guess which is the one that Jay and I think is so compelling. And then I reveal the answer. And then I explain why I think that scene is so instructive. And then I transition. I forget what I was selling at the time. But I then transition that bit of useful knowledge into an introduction to something that I'm doing. That involves them coming somewhere or buying something or getting involved in my business.
Yeah.
So that's a good example of a process that definitely works.
Well, it's nice having a newsletter, and you know, I've probably unsubscribed from 1,000 newsletters over the last 8 or 9 years. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is brilliant. I mean, I don't just say that. I mean, what you just explained, I have never actually heard anybody articulate any of this anywhere. And I hope the listeners are really tuning into this and take time, maybe even right this second, and head over to your site, kenmccarthy.com, and subscribe to your newsletter, because it is top drawer.
Well, thanks. And, you know, while we're on this, let me talk about something. Pre-internet, there was this thing called mail order. I mean, it still exists. There was this thing called direct mail, which still exists. And that was the only game in town. And if you can imagine, there was a time before television. There was even a time before radio. What this means in practical terms is that all the best minds of advertising were working in the print medium. Everybody's probably heard of Claude Hopkins and scientific advertising. And there are other people who grew up as the 20th century evolved, like John Caples, fantastic ad writer, Maxwell Sackheim, inventor of the Book of the Month Club, and basically the inventor of the continuity program. Imagine that. He's another guy that started pre-radio, you know. Well, here's my point. A lot of brilliance was poured into understanding the written persuasion process in the turn of the century, the 20s, the 30s. And then when radio appeared and TV appeared and now the internet appeared, everybody's gotten a little bit sloppy, you know, a little bit haphazard and catch-as-catch-can and, hey, we'll try this and we'll try that. In the old days, they were a lot more scientific. And one of the formulas that was created, I believe this was by actually a professor, and then it was adopted by Maxwell Sackheim, who I think was responsible for disseminating it. It's a very simple formula. Some of the people on the call may have heard of it, but it's so profound, and it follows up on what I was just talking about. Here's the formula. It's A, I, D, as in David, A, okay? And it's the formula for written persuasion or spoken persuasion. A is attention, and that acknowledges that the first task is to catch and capture attention. I is interest. Okay, that explains and reinforces what I said a little bit earlier, is it's not just enough to grab somebody's attention. You also have to involve them by being interesting. And how do you become interesting? You talk about things that are of interest to the listener. That's the simplest way to be interesting. If everybody's talking about Indiana Jones, that's a great way to open a conversation. If your particular marketplace is very interested in expanding business and growing business, will you talk about that issue?
Right.
So that's the I. Now the next two ones are very, very important, and this completes the cycle. The next thing is desire. Okay, so we don't want to just be interesting. You know, that doesn't make any money. You know, we want to channel, and that's what I did in my ad. Once I captured attention, once I got people involved and interested in what I was saying, because I was talking about things of interest to them, then I started moving to the product that I wanted them to be desiring, quite frankly. And I started, you know, talking about how wonderful it was and all it's, you know, all that it could do for them. Okay, and that's the desire part. I think of it in terms of fanning the flames of desire. Your prospects, your customers are you know, on your blog, or they're reading your email, or they're on their website, or they're at a discussion board because they're interested. They're interested in the general area. So there's this passion that you have the potential to ignite by offering them the right product in the right way.
Yeah.
And so capture their attention. Make sure that you're interesting and saying things of interest to them, and then channel that interest by describing basically something wonderful. I always think of it in terms of I'm describing paradise, you know, in as great, vivid detail as I possibly can, and that creates desire. Now, desire is also created by frustration, if you think about it. You see something you like, and like, oh, that looks great, and then you find out, well, I can't get it, or there's a limited supply. Or I have to get it now, or it's now or never, or there's a deadline. So creating desire is twofold, very important, very, very important. It's making the thing as attractive and as wonderful as you possibly can, always telling the truth, by the way. You know, just the real benefits. You don't have to make things up. If your product's good, it's good. You know, just spell it all out. But then you have to sort of throw in a little monkey wrench that lets the prospect know, hey, you know, you can't just dream about this thing. Because it may not be around forever, or it may not be around at this price, or it may not be available in this form, or, you know, a million and one reasons why there's a reason to act now. So, and that's the fourth part is action, and the fourth part of a piece of persuasive writing is very simple. It's clearly lay out what the next step is, crystal clear. And I want to refer back to Gary Halbert again because he was really such a genius at this. I remember once he spent 2 hours just reading his calls to action from various letters. And people go, oh, Gary's a genius, he's the master, and all that's true. But when you read his calls to action, they were just super simple. He would say things like, in order to get this free report, go to your telephone and call the following number. You know, he'd spell the number. When you call this number, you will get a live operator. Her name is Agnes. Okay? Agnes will tell you. And he would just, like, explain exactly in 3D Technicolor exactly what the call to action was. So the formula is A-I-D-A. You've got to have their attention or there's no game. Once you get their attention, you have to be speaking about things that are interesting to them. Once you've got them involved, now you can start to channel them towards the object of desire that you have to sell. You make desire happen by painting a beautiful future, and also by putting in little, you know, it's like a movie. You know, the hero's going along, everything's fine, and all of a sudden something happens that gets between the hero and what he wants to accomplish. Now people suddenly start to get interested. So you have to put in a deadline. You have to put in a limit. You have to put something that makes them realize they've got to act, and then you've got to spell out exactly what it is that they need to do to get to the next place. And that's the old AIDA formula, I certainly didn't invent it. It's probably over 100 years old at this point. And it's the classic direct response copywriting formula that the great old timers, who frankly could sell rings around all of us, used.
Yes. And they would have had to be brilliant at it because, like you said, in the 80s, even the 80s, and way back before TV and radio, that was the only medium they had.
Well, think about this. Imagine this. No telephones. No, you know, or telephones. You had to walk down the street and, you know, use the local phone. No 800 numbers. Everything was a long distance call in the era when a long distance call might cost you $1 a minute. People don't, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a younger generation of people that don't remember long distance was like, it's hard to imagine this, but it used to be like a huge deal, you know.
Oh, I remember.
Okay, how about imagining this? No credit cards. All right? So in the olden days, you know, we're talking pre-70s, really. We're talking about an environment where if you wanted to make a sale, you had to persuade somebody to get an envelope, get a stamp, hand fill out an order form, hand fill out a letter, write a check, put the check in. You follow? I mean, this was, you know, climbing Mount Everest, and it was do or die. There was no other way to get a sale. That's why these guys were so good, and that's why I really want to encourage everybody to be aware that there are great books out there. They tend to be older, much older books that are very, very worth reading. If you don't mind, I'll just throw out a few.
Yes, please.
Titles. Yeah, I mean, and you know what the nice thing is? These are well-written, interesting books written by very interesting, smart guys. The classic Claude Hopkins, he wrote two books. One is Scientific Advertising, and another is a book which I really like even better, which is no one ever talks about, which is called My Life in Advertising. And they're often put together in one volume. And, I think if you had to pay $20 new for this, I'd be surprised. I mean, these books are very affordable. And this was a guy who, basically cut his teeth at the turn of the last century, you know, the early 1900s, pre-radio, pre-telephone. Another great book, John Caples, Tested Advertising Methods. Caples started writing in the 20s. He's the guy that invented the headline, "They Laughed When I Sat Down at the Piano."
Mm-hmm.
He wrote ads in the 20s, in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 50s, all the way to the 90s, I think. But he was also a great tester. He was also part of a big ad agency, BBDO, and he had a lot of colleagues. And he not only tracked his own ads, he tracked the ads of dozens and dozens of his colleagues over 60 years.
Wow.
And he put all this into a book called Tested Advertising Methods. Now, it's very important. The newest edition of Tested Advertising Methods is not very good. It was rewritten after he passed away. So you want to make sure when you get Tested Advertising Methods that you get the fourth edition or earlier. Don't get the fifth or the new edition. It's really, unfortunately, the publishing company really didn't understand the value of what John was saying, and John wasn't around. He wasn't alive anymore to protect his ideas. So get the older. That book is chock full of a million and one tested formulas, like how to write a headline, how to start a letter, how to close a letter, mechanical stuff. And I don't believe that the best copywriting is mechanical. However, I do believe that anybody that wants to write good ads and crank them out really fast would be well served to understand all the mechanics. I mean, it's just like, you know, you were a house builder and a carpenter, right, for a long time. Okay. Now, there's just some mechanical stuff you have to know. You have to know how to hold a hammer and, you know, the angle to hit a nail and, you know, how to measure. You just have to have that stuff under your belt. Then you take that basic knowledge and you create really interesting, creative, beautiful, unexpected things with it. So I'm not saying that you can become a great writer just by following rigid formulas, but what I am saying is, for goodness sake, take advantage of 60 years of test advertising.
No, so that one was Tested Advertising Methods, fourth edition,
yeah,
or earlier. I got his first name, John. What was his last name?
Caples, C-A-P-L-E-S.
Wonderful. Great, great.
And you know what? I'm not even – those two books, I'll throw in one bonus book. This was written by a guy named Victor Schwab, S-C-H-W-A-B, and it's called How to Write an Advertisement, or an Advertisement. This the interesting thing about Vic Schwab is that he helped work. Who's the guy that wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People? Dale Carnegie. He's the copywriter that shaped that book so that it became so popular. He wrote the original ads. He wrote the table of contents. He wrote the titles for each chapter. He injected a lot of really smart copywriting principles in that book. And, of course, that book, I think, has sold over 15 million copies. It's one of the best-selling books of all time.
Yeah.
And so those three books, Tested Advertising Methods, How to Write a Good Advertisement, and Scientific Advertising, will take you so far. I would buy them. I'd put them by my bedstand. I would read, like, a chapter first thing in the morning. I'd read a chapter right before you go to bed. Soak your brain in those things, and you will become so intelligent about copywriting, you'll shock yourself. Now, if you don't mind me just throwing out one other thing, something that none of the copywriting gurus like to talk about because they're afraid they're going to scare their customers off is writing is a doing thing. It's not a learning thing. It's not like you read a book and all of a sudden you're a great writer. Good writing evolves, and it comes from writing a little bit every day. That's my strongest recommendation to anybody that wants to make more money and improve their writing. Make sure you write a little bit every day. Again, first thing in the morning is a great thing. Or a fixed hour, maybe after dinner. Get into a routine. Make it ironclad. It doesn't have to be hours and hours, but make it regular. Writing is kind of a flow thing. You're trying to train yourself to get in to be able to get into the zone at a moment's notice. And that comes just through doing it and doing it and doing it. And it really does become easier and easier and easier. And you will get to the point where it always is work, you know, it always is you have to think, you have to use your talent, your energy, but it gets to be fun. And I realize, you know, in the beginning, if you haven't done a lot of writing or writing is relatively new to you, it can seem a little bit awkward. The quickest way to break through that is just write a little bit every day. Just write. Write letters to your friends, you know, write notes to your mom. I mean, just write.
Bob text everything in little symbols and start fully writing again.
Yeah, and and the other thing that's really important is don't really worry whether your writing is any good or not in the beginning. Worry about whether you're doing it every day. And let me give you another, so really important. Writing flows from thinking and research. And James, you and I talked about this right before the call. A good rule of thumb is that I spend 80% of my time researching, reading, thinking, daydreaming, speculating, sort of mulling things over, and 20% of my time writing. So folks that sit down in front of a blank page and choke, the reason they're choking is not because they're not good writers or can't be good writers or because they're dumb or because they're not creative, none of those things. It's because they don't realize the huge amount of time that has to precede writing, the thinking time. And that's really important. The other, I think, very important ratio is you write, you know, you do your research, you come up with an idea, and you just write. You know, write as fast as you can, get it out as fast as you can. I think, and this is just a rough estimate, that I probably spend about 80% of my time rewriting and polishing and rearranging and eliminating things and clarifying things, and only 20% of my time actually creating.
Right.
Nobody ever tells fledgling writers this, and they get the impression that there are certain people who can just sit down and whip out great stuff.
Away they go.
Yeah, it's just not true. We spend a lot of time thinking and reading and sort of filling the data bank. Then we come up with an idea and we try to get it on paper as fast as possible. And then real process begins. Again, it's just like building a house. You know, there's the framing, and that's sort of rough. And then start putting in the finishing touches, the floors, the molding, and all these little fine points that make a house. Writing is exactly the same. You want to rough it out. You know, it's got to be solid, you know, but you want to put up something rough, and then you want to go back and you know, come as close as you can as perfecting it. And, yeah, it is work. It's not, there's no magic, but I want to say this. It really is the difference between, you know, breaking even and struggling and making, you know, really, really nice money. If I personally had not made the investment and continue to make the investment in writing every day, in using my mind every day, in practicing communication every day, there's no way I would have a business the size that I'd have today. There's just no way. It would be a fraction. And in our field, you know, with the internet marketing education world, where there's 10,000 new competitors every week, I might even have a business at all. The thing that's keeping me above water and allowing me to prosper is the words that are coming out of my mouth and on the page. And that is a matter of the research I do, the reading I do, the thinking I do, and the daily writing I do. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say another amazing thing that I find with the internet is if you think back to all of the time and effort that you put into your direct mail business and then packaging those up and sending them off in the mail, that's not working for you anymore. Those campaigns are over.
Mm-hmm.
And the profits were made. Where today, I notice on your sites, and I know I do a lot of the same, every time you create and you sit down and you work out like this Indiana Jones email and the little letter and the whole little package that you've put together here, this can work for you for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, I hope everybody on this call knows what an autoresponder is, and if not, it made me the secret to our business, you know, the ability to...
That's a really, really good point, and maybe you could talk to that, because I know sometimes, even though, you know, we hammer on it at times, I know people that are getting into the business sometimes get a little too wrapped up in the creation of their website, and they say, you know what, I'm going to wait till I get my list together. I'm not quite ready for my autoresponder. I haven't really, you know, and for whatever reason, they don't get to that point of getting this set up. Maybe you could talk to how absolutely critical and important it is to get that list building.
Well, it's an interesting coincidence. I was reviewing this course that I created a while back, that's sort of a big, you know, intro to internet marketing as a foundations course. And one of my challenges when I put that course together, I was trying to figure out, you know, I don't want to teach people 101 things because, you know, who's got 100 time to learn 101 things? So I was trying to distill everything to its essence. So I sort of came up with five fundamental skills that you have to have. And then I said, okay, of these five, what's the single most important skill, the number one skill that you've just got to have under your belt? And I concluded back then, and I still think is true, the number one skill for marketing and business is not brilliance, it's follow-up. Follow-up, follow-up, follow-up. And the reason for this is really, really important. It's a rare prospect who is ready to buy something significant on the first exposure. Yes, there are such people. Yes, you can make sales on the first presentation. Yes, you should have as your goal to make a sale on the first presentation. But reality says the vast majority, and we're talking maybe 90% plus, of the people who encounter your business and your offer are, for one reason or another, not going to be ready to buy on the first go. Maybe they're short of funds. Maybe they've got a lot on their plate and they're just overwhelmed and can't focus. Maybe they're the kind of person that needs time to make up their mind. There's a million to one things that interfere with somebody making a purchase on the first time. Therefore, the victory goes not to the smartest marketer or the most brilliant marketer or the most dazzlingly creative marketer, but the marketer who, once he or she gets a lead, has a system in place to follow up and follow up and follow up and follow up till the end of time. I'm amazed at how many people end up at, for instance, at a systems seminar who first encountered my work four, five, 6 years ago. And because I never drop a lead, ever, I mean, you know, if somebody unsubscribes or they die, obviously they're going to come off the list.
Yes.
But otherwise, you'll receive mail from me forever. And this kind of takes us full circle. It's not just enough to follow up. You have to make sure every follow-up is valuable, interesting, meaningful, useful, productive for the reader. And that's where your copywriting skills come in. And if you combine those two skills, the relentless intensive time follow-up program with using your mind, using your creativity, you know, to come up with useful, interesting things to say to your marketplace, you've got the foundation of a really good, assuming you've picked the right niche and you've got good products and everything else is running well, you've got the foundation of a really strong business that will you know, serve you for a long, long, long time.
Yes. Such good advice. You couple that with what you talked about earlier with the way you structure emails so that you are mm-hmm. giving that interesting, compelling.
Useful. I mean, you know there's another book I want to suggest to people. It's called How I Raised Myself from a Failure to Success Through Selling. And it's by a guy, it's one of those old classic books. It's by a guy named Frank Betger, B-E-T-G-E-R. Interestingly enough, Victor Schwab helped Frank Betger craft this book. And it's amazing to me how many big league direct mail people like, Gary Bensavenga would be one example, who's a direct mail copywriter on earth. He feels that's the number one book on selling. And I'm drawing a blank. Marty Edelston, who started a business on his kitchen table that now does routinely over $100 million a year, he feels that's the best book on marketing. And one of the things in that book, which is so interesting, is even it has nothing to do with direct marketing at all. It's about personal selling. And one of the secrets of personal selling, you know, selling person to person, is follow-up. And one of the things that Betger talks about in that book is how to follow up and be consistently interesting to people. Because if you think about it, you know, this is all sort of an abstraction, but if you're actually showing up at somebody's office or at somebody's home on a regular basis, you can't show up with a canned speech. You can't, you've got to actually be, you know, hitting the person where they live, you know, in a positive way. And Betger kind of talks about that whole process of remaining relevant and remaining interested and remaining useful. And, you know, and if you think about it, you know, the guy that shows up who's interesting and has something useful and entertaining perhaps to share is always welcome. You know, you may not buy from him today, you may not buy from him next week, but you're always opening the door and you're always willing to listen. Strange as it may sound, and Gary Bensavenga confirmed it for me, the most important skill of the copywriter is to make sure people are listening. You know, once they're listening, all things become possible. If they're not listening, nothing can happen. And then let's hit one more point about this, because I realize we're kind of coming up to the end.
Yeah, we're coming up.
Be very careful about employing clever, strong arm, hard sales, gee, how smart I am sales tactics. Okay, you see a lot of that on the internet. You see a lot of people advocating that stuff. And you know what? You may get a quick hit, but what you're going to do is burn out your future. Because nobody likes a smart aleck. Nobody likes to be pressured. Nobody likes to be, you know, have psychological intimidation tactics used against them. You know, they may endure it once or twice, but very quickly you'll be an unwelcome guest. And our goal as a copywriter is to be a perennially welcome guest, because the money is in follow-up. Let me put it this way, the millions are in the follow-up. It's not in being, you know, the world's most persuasive guy right out of the gate.
The name of that book again was How I Raised Myself from a Failure to Success Through Sales. Is that correct?
Through selling. Yeah.
Okay.
And the author is Frank Betger. And I can't tell you the number of super heavyweight direct marketing people who feel that the principles discussed in that book are the absolute best guidance for any kind of direct marketing.
Great advice. I'm definitely going to wrap these books up. Now, before unfortunately, I have got just a pile of questions for you, but we are out of time, and I think you've probably, you know, it's been a great time chatting with you, and there's been so much very powerful information that you shared with us. I want to thank you for that. Before share your contact information and we part ways, is there anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Have confidence in yourself. Have faith in yourself. If you can talk, you can write. If you're passionate and interested in the marketplace that you're in, and you should be, you will find all kinds of interesting things to talk about. Feed your mind, you know, with information and news and inspiring and interesting things related to your market and outside of your market. You know, you can't be an effective writer without having a lot of raw material. But most of all, I'd say most of all, have faith that you can do this. It's a craft. It's like plumbing. It's like being an electrician. You know, there's principles, there's foundations you have to learn, and then you have to show up on the job every day and lay pipe or, you know, string wire, and one day you find you're getting really good at it. So have faith. It doesn't matter how you used to write before, or if you weren't a good writer in school, or that all that stuff is irrelevant.
That's right. Absolutely. Let's get back to the hammer analogy. The first time you pick up a hammer, if you ever watch somebody brand new with a hammer, it's pretty funny to watch, and you better hope they're not hitting something that's valuable because there's going to be dents all over it.
Yeah.
But after a while, it's you know, water off a duck's back.
It's a built, you know, we all have the built-in capacity to learn and master writing. We all do. I'm convinced of it. You just have to put yourself on the path and, you know, follow the suggestions I gave you in this call.
Ken, I know you've got another conference coming up in Chicago, and I know listeners are probably who may have joined us a little late on the call, and I know I mentioned it earlier, but would you please spend some time and talk about where people can get signed up for your newsletter and a little bit more about anything you've got coming up?
Great. In November, we're doing a foundations course, systems seminar boot camp, specifically to lay out all the foundations of internet marketing. One of the things that I notice over and over and over again is there's very few educators. You know, for instance, like James is an example of somebody who does it right, but there's very few who make the effort to be comprehensive about all the things that are important in internet marketing. Most of the education out there is dramatic, you know, sort of like meteors, you know, going through the sky, you know, across the sky. That's very interesting, and it gets everybody excited, but it doesn't make anybody any money. This is, like every other endeavor on earth, this is a game of fundamentals. And so when we originally started the system seminar, it was a pretty simple setup. We had a handful of great teachers, and we took a relatively small group of people, and we just walked them through the whole process of internet marketing, one step after another. And we haven't done a seminar like that in years, and we're going to bring that kind of a training back. And this is going to be taking place in Chicago in early November. And for people that are interested in getting all the information about that, the place to go is smartbeginners.com/bootcamp, BOOTCAMP. And we'll be, my marketing method is really simple. If you're interested in what I'm doing, sign up, and I will give you a complete education before the seminar even starts. You may get enough information, you don't even need the seminar, or you may say, wow, this is so great, I want to come to the seminar and get more. Either way, I'm happy with the outcome. And we're going to have all kinds of fascinating things. We're actually going to take some great content from our past System Seminar Conference give it away to people on this list. It's a very good program to sign up for. It's free, it's no obligation. You can unsubscribe at any time. So that's smartbeginners.com/bootcamp. It's going to be fun. I've got some of my best faculty members are involved in this. And we're you know, we cover some pretty high-end things in our annual conference, but I think one of our greatest skills is teaching beginners or helping beginners become players. And the way you do that, I believe, is by being very thorough as to the fundamentals, and that's what we're going to be doing in Chicago.
Awesome. That's smartbeginners.com/bootcamp.
Yep.
Wonderful. All right, Mr. McCarthy. Ken, thank you so much for joining me for Coffee Talk. It's been a real pleasure to have you. I know we've only scratched the surface of some of the things we could have talked about, but it's been great having you. So thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks, James. I had a lot of fun.
Look forward to seeing you in Chicago.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Bye-bye.